Invite you to get active. Each week at this time, Z100 presents another way for you to get active in the community. Z100's Get Active features conversations with community leaders, directors of local charities and civic organizations, outlining what they are doing to make life in the tri-state area better. Z100 urges everyone to get involved in the community. So take a few minutes and check out this week's Get Active.
Welcome to iHeartRadio Communities, a public affairs special focusing on the biggest issues impacting you this week. Here's Manny Munoz.
I am Manny Munoz. Thank you for tuning into iHeartRadio's Communities. It is our weekly public affairs show where we try to bring you conversations that'll help you better understand important issues or maybe just some interesting topics. Either way, I do hope you'll stick around for the next half hour. And if you have any comments, questions, or suggestions, please feel free to reach out on Instagram. My handle is at IOD Manny. That's at IOD MANNY. Now, let's get on with the show. Back to school shopping is a yearly ritual, but for a lot of families right now, it's also becoming a financial burden. Let's go inside some new numbers with LendingTree's Chief Consumer Finance Analyst, Matt Schultz. Matt, I appreciate the time. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Your latest numbers show $858 is the number that might sound pretty manageable until Americans look at the big picture.
Yeah. There's no question that $858 is a lot of money. When you consider that the price of everything seems to be rising, so many people are living on a tight budget, living paycheck to paycheck. So when you're talking $800, $900+, that's significant money, no question about it.
How did you guys come up with that $858 number? What exactly does that signify?
Well, what that signifies is that we started off with data from the National Retail Federation from 2025, and then basically looked at spending in the categories of electronics, clothing, shoes, and school supplies, and then applied consumer price index data to basically extrapolate out what these costs looked like in previous years. And what we found is really interesting, which was that spending hasn't really changed much going all the way back to 2019, so before the pandemic. And part of it is because the price of electronics, so like computers and tablets and things like that, has actually fallen a little bit in that period, and it's allowing people to spend less.
So the back-to-school spending is almost unchanged, but because of inflation, everything is costing, what was it, 26% more, something like that?
Yeah. Those are really crazy numbers because most people have not gotten a 26% raise since 2019.
No, most people surely have not. So people aren't getting any more. They're getting actually less for a lot more.
Yeah. It's what we're seeing is that people are spending about the same, like we said, since 2019. And the truth is that while the cost of, you know, clothing and school supplies and shoes and things like that have gone up, people spending has roughly stayed flat. And again, some of that is that the price of electronics, the spending of electronics has fallen off a little bit. But some of that is also almost certainly that people have been more thoughtful about their spending on back to school, because they've had to be, because they're dealing with high prices in other spaces.
Sure. And now we're seeing the prices for those electronics, a lot of them anyway, go up because of the demand on RAM memory and things like that. A couple more minutes here with Matt Schultz. He is LendingTree's chief consumer finance analyst. You talk about the K-shaped economy. How does that show up when it comes to back to school shopping?
Well, we see the K-shaped economy in so much of what we talk about. But here, I think it's a situation where you have some people who are feeling good about things and don't mind spending more on back to school because they're not worried about taking on a little debt, paying a little bit of interest. But then you have the flip side with people who are really struggling and who are dialing back their spending because they really need to. And that all adds up to about flat spending, which is what we saw.
Are families, you think, keeping laptops, tablets, other devices so much longer because they simply can't just afford to replace them?
There's definitely some of that. And it's a smart thing. I mean, so much of back to school spending is about getting things that may, or replacing things that may still be in perfectly fine shape. So that backpack or that lunchbox or those shoes, you may not need to replace it. So it's okay.
Are there parts of the country that will spend a lot more than that $858 average and parts of the country that'll spend less?
Yeah, what we found is that the places that will spend the most are places that you would expect, kind of in the Northeast and kind of coastal sort of places. But what was the most interesting was the burden that various areas of the country face, because when you're talking about maybe $100 or so difference in spending from the highest state to the lowest state, but the burden that money creates is more significant. So in the Deep South in particular, the burden of that back to school spending is more significant than it is in some higher income areas like California and Massachusetts, places like that.
Well, it's shocking that it's only $100 difference from the most to the least.
Yeah, it was an interesting finding that most places around the country are spending roughly similar with a little bit of wiggle,
right,
on back to school, even though their incomes are significantly different.
How much of a difference? I know here in Florida where I am, we have a tax-free holiday, tax-free shopping period, right, for back-to-school supplies. Yeah. I know other states have that as well. How significant can those be? Those could really lead to big savings, right?
Yeah, I'm in Texas, and we have that too. And it can be significant when you're talking about in Texas, you have 6 to 8% savings, and while there's no guarantee that retailers won't bump up their prices a little bit to make up a little bit of the difference, it can still certainly be significant savings. And it's important for people to understand that those sorts of holidays can be really useful, but also just shopping around and looking at bargain bins and dollar stores and clearance racks and different places than you would normally shop. All that stuff can make a real difference. A
couple more minutes here with Matt Schultz. He is LendingTree's chief consumer finance analyst. Do you see people making mistakes? Can people make mistakes while trying to save money for back to school shopping that'll actually cost them?
Yeah. One big mistake that people can make is just going in without a plan and also relying too heavily on their credit cards, because credit cards can be a great tool, especially if you collect rewards and that sort of thing, and it can help extend your budget a little bit. But it also makes it really easy to overspend. So that's something that's really important to avoid.
Online shopping versus brick and mortar shopping. We do really have more resources at hand to be able to find out where we could get the best deals these days. Do you find that people, because it is mostly just regular school supplies, don't take advantage of those things and bargain shop?
Yeah, I definitely think that people could do more bargain shopping in almost any aspect of life. But certainly with back to school shopping, we're creatures of habit.
Yeah.
When it comes to shopping, and it's true with groceries and on down the line, we tend to go to the same places and buy the same things. But if you can break out of your routine, you can save yourself some money. It doesn't mean that you have to drive across town to save a dollar on a lunchbox. But if you take the time to shop around a little bit and be smart about that whole process, it can add up to some savings.
So let's close it out with your best advice for our listeners. If they still haven't finished their back to school shopping, what should they prioritize? What should they cut corners on?
Different for everybody. It's about understanding how much you can afford and what really matters to you most. It's going to be different for everybody down the line.
LendingTree.com is the website where you could go find out more information. He is Matt Schultz, LendingTree's Chief Consumer Finance Analyst. Really appreciate the time and the information. Best of luck.
Thank you.
You're listening to iHeartRadio Communities, our weekly public affairs show. I am Manny Munoz. If you have any thoughts, comments, or questions, please feel free to reach out to me on Instagram. My handle is at IODManny. That's at IODManny. As we approach the 25th anniversary of September 11th, many Americans are reflecting not just on what happened that day, but how it changed the world we live in. Scott Gibbs has written Toward the Turning, Rethinking the Meaning of 9/11, A Clash of Civilizations, and a Postmodern World, and he joins us now. Scott, thanks so much for the time.
Oh, thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it.
What pushed you to write this book and to write it now for the 25th anniversary?
Yeah, sure. Actually, it started as a germ of it started just after 9/11. I was, like so many of us were trying to understand what happened after the initial shock wore off. I was in graduate school at the time for getting a degree in clinical psychology, and I wrote a final paper for one of my classes about, sort of why 9/11 happened, focused on Islam and Islamism. And my professor said, Scott, this is pretty interesting. You ought to think about getting it published. So I rewrote some things and ended up submitting it to the Journal of Humanistic Psychology, went through a sort of a two-year peer review process, and ended up being published in 2005. Part of that, sort of going through that process, I realized that I was sort of uncomfortable with having focused on one side of the dynamic. Mm-hmm. Clearly there was a lot of rhetoric or information out there, Osama bin Laden and sort of the Islamist groups talking about all the things that the West had done.
Right.
And so it was clearly a dynamic there that needed to be unpacked to try to really understand what had happened and why. And so that the article then led me to expand, look at both sides, try to understand what was going on at a deeper level. And that whole process took some time. So, fast forward, here we are today.
what does the title Toward the Turning mean?
It comes in part from the philosophy of a guy named Martin Heidegger, who mm-hmm. talks about the turning. And basically, different times in history, there have been turnings of the way we see ourselves and the way we see our world.
Sure.
So for example, the Enlightenment comes up in the late 17th century, etc. And we go from a predominantly Christian world in the West in particular to what we think of today as sort of modernity, focused on the individual, progress, science, etc. That's a completely different world than the Christian world before that, the Middle Ages and before. And so the idea is, can we do that again to some degree with, you know, a turning towards something that looks a little bit more or that's more conducive to a global world, an interconnected world, the reality that we are connected with one another. It's sort of a systems type world, if that makes sense.
Sure.
As opposed to we are subjects, opposite objects in the world looking for control. So I don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole necessarily on this subject, but that is the turning. It's the hope that we can adjust how we see ourselves and the world toward, you know, greater harmony.
Right. We're speaking with Scott Gibbs. He's the author of Toward the Turning, Rethinking the Meaning of 9/11, The Clash of Civilizations, and a Postmodern World. Clash of Civilizations. When people hear that term, that phrase, what do you think they get wrong about it? What does it mean?
Well, it comes from political scientist Sammy Huntington, who wrote this back in the 90s, I believe, a book, originally a paper called The Clash of Civilizations, trying to understand what the world of international affairs was going to look like after the fall of the Soviet Union. So we had these sort of two poles, communism and liberal democracy, the United States and the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union's gone. Now we've got a world where it's sort of a unipolar world. And he was trying to understand, like, okay, what's the nature of conflict going to look like now? Mm-hmm. And his thesis was that there were different blocks, civilizational blocks, that were going to have conflict around the edges, meaning where they connected. And I think he's got some of that right, which is we see a place like Ukraine, for example, where they are half in the West, sort of Russia wants them, you know, back in the fold, and it's this fault line where there's conflict. Israel is a little bit the same. So there was a lot of pushback against that thesis. People didn't like the fact that he used clash, that it was inevitable, that we were just going to have conflict, that et cetera, that nations were what determined, not civilizations. But the thing I think he got right but didn't open the door to was this idea of identity, civilizational identity he focused on, but identity itself being important across whether it's a nation or a group, and how these identities really influence group dynamics, sometimes to really bad ends.
You are a psychotherapist, right? And you, I guess your career was getting started when you wrote this thesis. How did that, your background and how you changed the further in your career you got, change the way you look at some of these issues that you address in the book?
Yeah, sure. I have a real, you know, sort of passionate interest in psychology and religious studies and philosophy, and in trying to help people heal division, in solving conflict. Mm-hmm. I have it at the sort of local level in the room with a couple, and I have it across society.
Right.
And so the two have informed each other over the years. You know, I will, when I'm, you know, sort of giving these interviews or talks, I will often use examples from couples work that apply to group dynamics. Meaning, for example, a couple comes in and they're, you know, locked, they're in gridlock fighting. One of them's very critical, one of them's very defensive, and around we go. We don't actually talk about what the fundamental problems are, the fundamental feelings are. And in truth, that is exactly what goes on in America, for example, between the left and the right.
Sure. We have
different identities, different values, different ways of seeing the world. We're not negotiating those very well
And we're not trying to understand one another at all, because we don't speak anymore.
Right. And the not understanding is just keeps us locked in these, you know, vicious cycles
that
sometimes spiral out of control, right? And people die. Charlie Kirk is a victim of, you know, this whole division that has occurred. and other violence against other politicians, et cetera, and just the gridlock that occurs around policy, et cetera. We don't problem solve. We get stuck in the rhetoric, just like a couple does. And instead of like really trying to, as you say, understand what the other person's saying, express that we understand that, and then trying to talk about it and negotiate it.
Speaking with Scott Gibbs, he's the author of Toward the Turning, Rethinking the Meaning of 9/11, The Clash of Civilizations, and a Postmodern World. What do you mean when you talk about inherited identities? What does that mean?
Well, we are all, we kind of take for granted that we're American. I was raised evangelical Christian, right? That, we're from the Northeast or the Midwest or whatever your identity tends to be. We were, we use socialized in that, but it's inherited, meaning we're
born into it.
We're born into it. That's exactly right. And we're born into it, brought up in it, and we take it for granted. And that's just the way things are. And if we were born in a different time or in a different place, we'd have a different identity.
Believe in a different God. We'd have different culture, all of those things. So how does that tie into 9/11?
First of all, that identity has a huge influence on what we do, mm-hmm. who we elect, what our behaviors are, what our policies are, both in the Islamic world and here. When our identities, when we feel threatened, usually in some way, our identities harden. They narrow down. They become more rigid and dogmatic. They become dichotomous. They amplify in their sort of feeling, right? We dehumanize people. That's fundamentalism. That's, down a path or a recipe for disaster, particularly if we got a group mass movement, right? Then you're headed toward genocide, apartheid, war, right? The fury of war, or fervor. And so it's that identity that not only causes some, influences our behaviors, but that is the risk that in hardening of something much worse happening, if that makes sense.
I guess the point is that extremism, regardless what it's over, is the problem, right?
Yes, and I guess the deeper problem is extremism, meaning, we see it in little ways. Like, as you say, we don't understand. We're not listening. We're mm-hmm. closed off. I mean, right. That's on a continuum of extremism. We're not listening. We're not being open and fluid, right? And so fundamentalism, extremism is the overt challenge, but we have to look at where that comes from and try to mitigate that risk before it sort of takes on a life of its own. And we can try to do practical things to minimize extremism. But for me, the fundamental sort of possibility is to have a different understanding of who we are, which is to say something along the lines of, we understand as we're being socialized into an identity that part of that identity acknowledges that it's that,
right.
Which is to say it's one of many that it could be. It's not the truth of the way things are. There are other ways of seeing the world, and we can hold our identity loosely. It's not so important to our self-esteem, to our sense of control or safety in the world, that it sort of has a risk of overpowering us. And the more, the better understanding we have around that, the less risk there is of it spiraling into fundamentalism.
Right. This isn't a political book, right? It's not meant to be divisive. This focuses more on the psychology of 9/11, what happened and why, over the politics of it, right?
Yes. In fact, I do my best to, I think I say in there, I'm an equal opportunity critic. I mean, I would like to, I look at both sides of the issue. I'm not trying to, pick a side,
right.
So to speak. Some people don't like that at all.
Sure.
I don't feel like I can do my job if I pick a side and try to, help us better understand what's going on here so we can transcend it. So, no, it's not meant to be political at all, though I will say people who's, I mean, I do touch on a number of different identities, religious identities, national identities. And when people see themselves in that, they tend not to like what I have to say because I'm pushing on things that they hold as given. And it sort of can feel like an attack on me and mine,
sure,
so to speak.
I would imagine people from different backgrounds will respond differently, kind of like you were talking about the inherited identities. This book will be viewed differently by people of different identities. Speaking with Scott Gibbs, author of Toward the Turning, Rethinking the Making of 9/11, The Clash of Civilizations, and A Postmodern World, 25 years removed. What is it about the 9/11 story that you think maybe has been most forgotten over time?
There was a moment right afterward when we in the West and in large swaths of the world, and in the Muslim world too, I think. I mean, that's more complicated, but that was united in just a sense of shock and sadness, and that we were unified in that, in the sense of we don't want the world to be this way, right? That gave way to us and them. You're with us or you're against us. The March of Freedom, some of the Bush language, et cetera. And, that led on a cascade to where we are today, to in some degree, at least a strain of it. And, that we can be united, maybe, around this, and that we don't want this kind of a world.
Maybe it was the last time that we all felt like we were all in this together. We're all Americans. Didn't matter if you were black or white, if you were a liberal or a conservative, didn't matter what your religion was. We all felt like we were in it together. And I don't think we've had another time in the last 25 years where it felt that way.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. I mean, I'm I don't know if this is my politics exactly, but it is my sensibility, which is I'm longing for, hoping for someone who leads in a way that calls on the better part of ourselves.
Sure.
In inspiration toward real unity. I mean, I kind of, it's a little bit challenging for me. I don't know if I roll my eyes, but I am bothered by so many people saying we're so divided, we just need to get together and then turn around and do these things
divisive. Right.
And politicians in particular are because they are trying to divide and consolidate power, at some way they don't have an interest in unity.
Well, it suits them more to keep us divided. No, that's the way we're more active politically. Is this a book of hope?
Yes, I like to think so. I mean, I'm personally, I'm pretty skeptical that the challenges we're in right now are going to change anytime soon. But I'm a hopeful about humanity, I guess, was what I would say.
Sure.
That we will understand some of these things eventually and come to grips with them and, eventually reach a better place. So, I think it is. Go ahead.
Yeah, we will persevere, right? I guess is what I'm getting from you. I guess last but not least, there's a lot of younger readers who were not alive or old enough to remember really 9/11 clearly. What do you hope they would learn from it reading your book?
I guess it's in that regard, all they really know is sort of the division they've been a part of today. I mean, one thing I like the place we were just at, the hope, and that we can be united. But I would say to be really thoughtful about their participation in the division.
Mm-hmm.
Young people in particular tend to be really passionate, and it's really fantastic about the change and the transformation. But in part, there can be a listening that doesn't occur
right
in that as well, and makes them dogmatic and uncompromising themselves. They think they are acting against fundamentalism when in reality they are on a slippery slope headed in that direction,
exacerbating it. Yeah.
And so, you know, maybe if we're connecting it loosely to the sort of events, the shock that occurred, that, you know, had some sense of unity, that you know, we all just sort of look in the mirror and say, how are we participating in the division? Mm-hmm. And maybe ask ourselves, are we really committed to, like, to trying to unify things, if that makes sense?
Yeah, we should look, each one of us should look at ourselves in the mirror, right? Scott Gibbs, author of Toward the Turning, Rethinking the Meaning of 9/11, The Clash of Civilizations, and A Postmodern World, certainly a book that will get you thinking about how you feel. Scott, best of luck with it. I really appreciate the time today.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
I am Manny Munoz. I appreciate you listening to iHeartRadio's Communities this week. As always, if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, reach out to me on Instagram. My handle is @IODManny. That's @IODManny.
You've been listening to Get Active on Z100. Reach out and get active in your community. From soup kitchens to counseling centers, hospice care to the public library, find something you can do to make life in the tri-state area better. Thanks for listening. And remember, get active.
Hey, what's up? This is Charlie XCX.
Win tickets to Charlie XCX.
All weekend.
Cool, yeah.
Be there as Charlie takes over Brooklyn, September 14th or 15th at Barclays Center.
All you gotta do to win is stay tuned into my favorite station,
Z100.
New York's number one hit music station.
Sponsored by Happy Money.
Summer hits different when you're in motion. On the Post-Run High podcast, we're exploring what it really takes to perform at a high level through post-run conversations with athletes, founders, celebrities, and health experts.
Life is an ultra where things get hard, things suck at certain points, you have lows, but if you stay focused on your end goal and you get through the hard parts, it will get better.
Whether you're chasing a new PR or just getting out the door, this podcast is for you. Open your free iHeartRadio app, search Post-Run High, and listen now.
Your mind, think about your dumb face all the time. Living in your glass house, I'm outside, looking in a big blue eyes. Did it just to hurt me, make me cry? Smiling through it all, yeah, that's my life. You're an idiot. Now I'm short, now I'm positive. I should go and warn her.
Turn up.
Turn it up.
The best music plays here.
Yes.
C100.
I can't feel it. Girl, pick up your phone, I can't believe it. I can feel my spirit slowly leaving. I can see myself and I'm not breathing. I'm not breathing, slowly bleeding. I wish that I told you I might be late. I hope that I live life for a reason. But at least you play a song when I'm gone. And I hope you cry for me like I cry for you. Every night for you. Take it easy on me, baby, cause I tried with you. Saw my life with you. Time with you, now we're strangers and I hope that you still cry for me, like I cry for you, every night for you, I've been living with this lie, now I can't hide the truth, I can't hide the truth, girl I cry for you, girl I cry for you, oh yeah, I kiss you clean, I wash my face with whiskey tears, I disappear. Drive with you, saw my life with you, end of time with you, now we're strangers and I hope that you still cry for me, like I cry for you, every night for you, I've been living with this right now, I can't hide the truth, I can't hide the truth, girl I cry for you, girl I cry for you, ooh, yeah, every time I hit the road, it takes a little piece of me, kills me slow.
I'm sorry I'm here for someone else, but it's good to see your face. And I really hope you're doing well. I hope you're doing well. She was running late for dinner, outside of town. Left the phone a little bitter, but it's cool for now. Far from perfect for each other, but we're working it out, I suppose. Good to see your face, and I really hope you're doing well. I hope you're doing well. I'm sorry I'm here. I'm here for someone else.
What happened next?
When she finally walks into the restaurant, hate to say it, but I knew it, I was already gone. Oh, Bammy, don't do it, you're breaking her heart. Bammy, don't do it, Bammy, don't do it. But I need to go. It's not personal. When I say, I'm sorry you're here for someone else. It's good to see your face, and I really hope you're doing well. I hope you're doing well. I'm sorry I'm here for someone else. I know you wish that I could stay and talk at the bar all by ourselves, but I'm here for someone else.
Did you just throw up a rainbow?
Yeah. What?
Nothing.
New York's number one hit music station.
C100.
Kissing, I hope the cutters. Whether they like it or not. I wanna show you up. I wanna show you up. I wanna brag about it. I wanna tie the knot. I wanna show you up. I wanna show you up. You love it when he hit and smack too. Baby, let me lick on your tattoos. That's true that I like PDA. Take it to a city, play in the bathroom. Who that man with the big strong hands on a ass in the club with the past? Baby, that's you. Front seat chilling with the window down. I'd be 10 toes down on the dash getting fast food. Hope you can handle the heat. Put your name in the streets. Get used to my fans looking at you. What they heard, I'm with them birds. I'm a mean kitty. Don't get with the rats. Your boys be mad that I don't insult. Girls hate too. To the pigtail, I love you. I want a big chill, boy, don't trip. I'll split a big bill. Take you around the world, they don't have to understand. Rub it in their face, put a rock on her hand. Kissing, I hope they cut us. Whether they like or not. I wanna show you up. I wanna show you up. I wanna brag about it. I wanna tie the knot. I wanna show you up. I wanna show you up.
Love is pain, but I need it. Yeah. Too good when the beam kicks in. Like Fortnite, I'ma need your skin. Yeah. Don't go with the bin. Boy, you're the one, you're the only man. Me and you are my only fans. Holy cow, you're the holy trend. Hold me down when I hold me. Be my security, it's your therapy. With you, I ain't holding back. When I need my space, you give that. When he broke my heart, you fixed that. With a long walk on the beach. Love it when they Hong Kong from the street. When they see us zoom by in the Jeep. We a whole damn, we a energy. Baby, we could just ride on our enemies. They all wanna know how you get to me. Let them feel how they feel, let me feel the stings. Cause this type of love's the epitome. Said,
kissing, I hope they cut us. Whether they like or not. I wanna show you up. I wanna show you up. I wanna brag about it. I wanna tie the knot. I wanna show you up. 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 Yeah, yeah, yeah. I wanna show you up. I wanna
Hello.
What's up, New York?
This is Lady Gaga.
Hi, I'm Chappell Roan.
Teddy Swam.
And Z100.
Z100.
Z100 is how I get to you.
She liked the love. She liked the hat.
Summer hits harder.
There's so many songs of the summer.
On Z100.
New York's number one hit music station.
I'm more than just an option. Refuse to be forgotten.
Hey, hey, hey.
I took a chance with my heart.
Hey, hey, hey.
And I feel it taking over. I better find your loving. I better find your heart. I better find your loving. I better find your heart. I better find your loving. I better find your heart. I better find your heart. A number.
Hey, hey, hey.
I doubt you'll find another.
Hey, hey, hey.
So every single summer.
Hey, hey, hey.
I'll be the one that you remember. And I better find your loving. I better find your heart. I better find your loving. I better find your heart. I better find your loving.
Summer hits different when you're in motion. On the Post Run High podcast, we're exploring what it really takes to perform at a high level through post-run conversations with athletes, founders, celebrities, and health experts.
Life is an ultra where things get hard, things suck at certain points, you have lows, but if you stay focused on your end goal and you get through the hard parts, it will get better.
Whether you're chasing a new PR or just getting out the door, this podcast is for you. Open your free iHeartRadio app, search Post Run High, and listen now.
I know you wanted me to stay, but I can't ignore the crazy visions of me in LA. There's a special place where boys and girls can all be queens every single day. I'm having wicked dreams of leaving Tennessee. If Santa Monica, I swear it's calling me. Will make my mama proud. It's gonna cause a scene. She sees her baby girl, I know she's gonna scream. Girl, the club, oh mama, I'm just having fun on the stage in my heels. It's where I belong, down at the Pink Pony Club. I'm gonna keep on dancing at the Pink Pony Club. is on my mind. And mama, every Saturday I can hear your southern drawl 1,000 miles away saying, "Come."